Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So we are discussing about the art of dying, the way to immortality. Yesterday we discussed quite extensively about how Srimad Bhagavatam is dealing with this topic. As a matter of fact, Srimad Bhagavatam begins with this problem. Parikshit Maharaj is about to leave his body, and Parikshit Maharaj is considering he has only 7 days left. Now what should he do? And then Sukadev Goswami came and instructed him about what he should do. And in this way, we can see that Bhagavatam is actually teaching us this specific topic. The main purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam is actually this art of dying. Now, when one masters this art of dying, then he doesn't die. That's the wonderful thing about this art. You master this art, but when you master this art of dying, then you do not die. You achieve immortality. So immortality is actually the natural consequence of one's spiritual situation. When one becomes properly situated in his spiritual identity, then he becomes immortal. To begin with, the living entities are immortal. But we have become subjected to the cycle of birth and death, which is considered to be like a whirlpool. When one falls in a whirlpool, it's very difficult to come out of it. Very difficult. I mean, practically impossible. He is helplessly drawn into it. And this is the whirlpool of samsara. Samsara means the cycle of birth and death. Birth and death. It's cycling constantly. One is born to die. And then one dies to be born again. In this respect, Krishna tells in Bhagavad Gita that jatasya hi dhrubor mrittu, dhrubang janma mritasya cha. That jatasya means one who is born, for him dhrubam mrittu, for him death is inevitable. For him death is the absolute truth. One who is born must die. Therefore we see that the atheistic people, they try to be immortal, but they can't. They can never become immortal. No one will ever become immortal in this material nature. They're trying in so many different ways. One classic example of this endeavor to attain immortality is Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu performed such severe austerities that his whole body was eaten up by termites and ants. They made an anthill around his body. And his body was under this, and within this anthill. And there are many such examples in the Vedic scriptures of such austerities. There was another example that has been described in the 9th canto, Chyavana Rishi. Chyavana Rishi, he was performing such austerities that anthill was created around him. And a princess, while she was also with her father when he was hunting, and she came across this strange looking anthill, and she saw that there are two holes and there were some bright lights coming out of that. And out of curiosity she poked that with a hairpin, and then the blood started to come out from there. So the father was when the father got to know, he was very worried. He realized that she has hurt some great saintly personality. So not only that Hiranyakashipu performed austerities in such a way that an anthill was created around his body. There are many such examples of such austerities, performance of such austerities. There is also, we come across another example, that Narad Muni, when he was traveling, he came across a yogi. He was performing such severe austerities that an anthill grew out of his body. Not grew, an anthill was created out around his body. And then this person asked Narad Muni, when you go back to Vaikuntha, can you please ask the Lord when he is going to take me back? So when Narad Muni came back from Vaikuntha, this sage, this yogi asked him, did you ask Narayan when he is going to take me to Vaikuntha? Narad Muni said yes, and Narayan said that you have to come back for another lifetime. And this yogi was very upset. He said, another lifetime? How can that be? I perform such severe austerities. So in this way we can see that through this kind of austerities or this kind of materialistic endeavor, one can never achieve immortality. Same was the case with Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu's austerity was actually a classic example of austerity. His whole body was eaten up. Only the skeleton was standing. That means his intestines, his lungs, his heart, his brains, everything was eaten up. There was nothing left. And his life air was sustained within his bones in the marrow. Now, still then, Hiranyakashipu could not attain immortality. He was performing such austerities in order to become immortal. And then as a result of his austerities, Brahma became perturbed. And Brahma himself came down and asked Hiranyakashipu, what do you want? And Hiranyakashipu said, please give me the boon that I'll become immortal. Brahma says, I can't give that boon because I myself am not immortal. So how can I grant you this boon? So this is the situation. Even up to Brahma, everyone is mortal in this world. Jatasya hi dhruva mrityu. Whoever is born must die. There is no exception to this rule. Brahma is born. But Brahma is born in a very special way. Brahma came straight from the Lord's navel. Directly he came from the Lord through his navel. But still, because he was born, although directly from the Lord, in that sense, Brahma is considered to be Aja, unborn. But still, because he is in the universe, he is in the material nature, he took birth. It's although not an ordinary birth, but it is some kind of birth. Therefore, he must die. And Brahma Samhita describes, what is Brahma's lifespan? From our calculation, it may appear to be very, very long. But what is the lifespan of Brahma? Jasyaika nishyashita kala mathavalamba jivanti loma vilaja jagadandanatha. Jagadandanatha, jagat anda. Jagat anda means Brahmanda, the universe. And jagadandanatha means the Brahmas. Not just one Brahma, there are millions of Brahmas. And what is the lifespan of these Brahmas, apparently who live for such a long, long time? What is the duration of Brahma's day? 1,000 chaturjugas. One day of Brahma is 1,000 chaturjuga. Chaturjuga means one chaturjuga is 4.32 million years. And 1,000 multiplied by 1,000. So what he got? 4.32 billion years. So actually we can't figure out the difference between, at least I can't figure out the difference between a million and a billion. It's so big an amount, or big a number, that we can't really figure out the difference. But that is the thing. Like, it is, after all, a huge lifespan. But compared to Krishna, not even Krishna, Vishnu. Krishna's expansions. So, jashyaika nishyashita kala mathavalamba. One breath of Vishnu is the duration of Brahma's life. One breath. He exhales and he inhales. That's it. And then it is saying that Vishnu, sahya jasya kala vishesha, he is an expansion of Krishna, Govinda. So this is what material nature is like. It's a relative reality. We may think that our lifespan is so short, only 100 years at the most. But consider, if an ant is told, the human beings live for such a long time. This is the lifespan of a human being. What will the ant think? He'll say, come on, I had enough of that. just go and tell these fairy tales to someone else, not me. So this is the meaning of relativity. Relative. Now, in relation to us, Brahma's life is very big. But when you go to Brahma, or Brahma Loka, Satta Loka, then you will find they are lamenting, oh, we got only such a short span of life. So, therefore, a person situated in knowledge will not be affected by this consideration of life and death. He is not interested in attaining immortality. Rather, he says, yes, I will die. I will die. But let me master the art of dying. A devotee doesn't want to avoid death, but he learns, he practices to die the right way. And when one dies the right way, then what happens? He goes back to Godhead. he goes back to Godhead. Like Parikshit Maharaj is one such example. When he found out that he has, his life is going to come to an end soon, he just started to prepare himself for that moment. Another such example is King Khatanga. He fought with the demons on behalf of the demigods. And the demigods were pleased with him and they asked him, "So tell me, what do you want?" He asked, "Tell me, how much time do I have? How am I going to die?" And they said, "You have only 48 minutes left." And he said, "Fine, thank you very much for the information." And he went and prepared himself for that moment. So this is the real intelligence. This is the examples of individuals who are situated in knowledge. Another wonderful way of dying we see are the Pandavas. Pandavas, especially Yudhishthir Maharaj, when he got to know that Krishna left the planet, he felt, okay, then what's the use of staying in this planet any longer? Krishna left, so what am I going to do here? So although he was the king of the entire earth planet, when Krishna left, nothing really meant anything to him. Everything became totally insignificant. And he decided, he just made arrangements, coronated Parikshit Maharaj in the throne, and he said, "Okay, I'm quitting." "Where are you going?" "I'm going out in Mahaprasthan." Mahaprasthan means a great departure. A great departure. This is done in a way like one starts to walk towards the Himalayas. He keeps on walking and walking and walking without eating, without drinking, without sleeping. Just to make this body totally exhausted so that the soul would leave the body. And then his other brothers said, "Okay, then we are also going to join you." And Yudhishthira Maharaj said, "Okay, do whatever you want, I'm not interested. Don't ask me for permission. If you want to do it, then just do it." Then Draupadi said, "Okay, then I'll also join you all. You all are leaving, so what am I going to do here?" So she also left and they started to walk. And one after another their bodies fell. Draupadi was the first one to fall. Then Sahadev, then Nakul, then Arjun, then Bhima. And where did Bhima leave his body? High up in the Himalayan mountain, in Badrikashram, near Badrikashram. Even by car, it takes good 10 hours. 10 hours means, of course, it's a windy mountain road. It's a very wonderful road. There is nothing on the side of the roads. No railing, nothing. And sometimes it goes 5,000, 6,000 feet deep. And sometimes some cars just go that way. And anyway, it's a long way. And mind you, there was no road at that time. And they just kept on walking. They just walked and walked until their body fell. So why what they were doing while they were walking? They were simply becoming absorbed in the thoughts of Krishna. And so when the body fell, they left their body thinking of Krishna. This is what happens when one masters the art of dying. And Krishna consciousness is actually the art of dying in reality. It teaches us how to die. And tomorrow we'll discuss how we saw how Prabhupada left his body and how many devotees are leaving their bodies. Anyway, today we are going to discuss about the different individuals, different personalities who mastered the art of dying from Srimad Bhagavatam. So, one beautiful example is Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj, I mean, when you consider Dhruva Maharaj's life, it's very interesting. A six-year-old boy, he wanted to sit on his father's lap. And the father was henpecked by his other wife, Suruchi, Dhruva's stepmother. And she was upset that he was letting him sit on his lap. So she wanted that her son should become the favorite. And although he was young, he should actually succeed the throne. So she was making all the arrangements. And since she was the favorite of the king just listened to her words. And so Dhruva was denied the right to sit on his father's lap. And his mother, stepmother, actually insulted him. He said that, look, if you want to sit on his lap, then you have to take birth through my womb. I mean, sometimes some women can be vicious. So she was, her stepson, just a six-year-old boy, but she is so cruel towards him. And Dhruva also is a Kshatriya. Although 6 years old, he was very upset. And he decided to take revenge. Okay, you said that? Okay, I'll show you. So he went back to his mother and told her. Told her that this is what happened. And he was crying due to this insult. So then Dhruva Maharaj's mother, Suniti, told him that actually Narayan can save you from this situation. He can fulfill your desire to become the king. And he said, okay, I will get a position from Narayan even higher than that of my grandfather. And that is the situation which is even higher than the situation of Lord Brahma. And so, Jai Shri Shri Radha Goloka Nanda Ki Jai. Now, apparently, we see Dhruva is so attached. But then we see how Dhruva is gradually becoming detached. He performed severe austerities. He went to the forest and he was searching for Narayan. He didn't know who Narayan was. And he was asking everybody, are you Narayan? In the forest, who do you come across? Tigers, lions, snakes. And he was asking everybody, are you Narayan? Are you Narayan? And then finally Narad Muni, seeing his intensity, seeing his sincerity, came over and told him how to get Narayan. And he gave him the mantra and asked him to meditate on the mantra. And Dhruva Maharaj was meditating in the mantra in such a way. Like here also we can see another kind of austerities, but this is a positive austerity. positive because it's for the sake of Narayan. And Hiranyakashipu's austerity was negative because it was for his own immortality. Now, this is the advantage of approaching Narayan. So he approached Narayan and he approached Narayan and in order to find Narayan, he performed great austerities. He became so absorbed in meditating on the Lord that he stopped eating. And he would just eat some dry leaves whenever he had to eat. But that also he stopped. He was sustaining himself just by drinking some water. That also he stopped. Stopped drinking. Then he stopped breathing. And then Narayan came to him. But when Dhruva saw Narayan, then he realized the futility of what he was going to ask from him. And Narayan told him that, Dhruva said that, look, what I was actually hankering for and for what I had been performing such great austerities and approached you appears to be just like some broken pieces of glass. I don't want that. I simply want your association. I simply want to be engaged in your devotional service. I don't want anything else. A six-year-old boy had such profound realization. But Narayan told him, no. Since that desire was there in the heart, go through it. Go through it. And he became the king. And not only a king, he became so powerful that he defeated the Gandharvas. He was slaughtering the Gandharvas in such a way that Kuvera became worried. He came and said, please stop doing that. Why unnecessarily you are killing? And that also, we can see, the brother, his younger brother, who was actually his rival to the throne, when that brother got killed by the Gandharvas, he became so angry that he started to wipe out all the Gandharvas. And then Kuvera came and gave him his advice, and then Dhruva desisted. And then Dhruva Maharaj retired from home, from his household life. And he went to the Himalayas to spend the rest of his time in the association of the devotees of the Lord in Badrik Ashram, which is a very holy place, and many saintly personalities were residing there. Dhruva Maharaj went there and he spent his time in the association of those devotees. And then one day, the chariot came from Vaikuntha with two Vishnu Dutas, Nanda and Sunanda. And they came and told him, please come, we have come to take you to Vaikuntha. So Dhruva Maharaj went, took a bath, he bade farewell to everybody, circumambulated the chariot for three times. And when he was about to climb the chariot, then he saw Death was standing there with folded hands. Please bestow your mercy upon me. And how did Dhruva Maharaj bestow his mercy upon him? He put his foot on Death's head to climb the chariot. Now this is the art of dying. Death comes, but how does death come? Not as an object of fear, not as someone who is something that is very, very undesirable. But he just took him on his stride, okay? Put his foot on his head to light the chariot from Vaikuntha. Now that is what actually happens to a devotee. It's not that a devotee doesn't die, or we can say that it seems that a devotee also dies. But how does he die? How does a devotee die? How does a devotee approach death? Death comes to him, but how? With folded hands. Therefore it has been described that jad bibheti swayam bhayam. The personification of fear, the personified fear actually is death. And it is said that the personified death is afraid of Krishna. So if we want to conquer death, what is the safest way, what is the easiest way to do that? Take shelter of Krishna. Just take shelter of Krishna and death will be conquered, death will be overcome. So this is actually the art, the real art of dying. Sorry, I got a bad cold. And this is the real art of dying. Now, another very wonderful example is Prahlad Maharaj. His father wanted to kill him. But what did Prahlad Maharaj do? Did he make any endeavor to struggle against his father's onslaught? No. He just depended upon Krishna. His mood or his attitude was, well, Krishna, if you want me to die, it's fine. As Bhaktivinoda Thakur is describing, marobi rakhobi joicha tohara. Whether you want to keep me or you want to kill me, it's simply up to you. Because I'm your eternal servant. And the servant doesn't have any free will. A servant, he is just sold out to his master. Whatever the master wants, he'll do that. In that respect, I heard one incident that the king of Saudi Arabia went to France, and they took him to a kind of a tour, and they showed him in the guillotine, and they explained how it works, and he wanted to have a practical demonstration how it works. He wanted someone to be placed there and chop his head off. And they said, whoever was taking him around, probably, you know, big government officials or ministers, they said, how is it possible? He said, well, in my country, there won't be any problem. Because their understanding is a slave doesn't have his will. This master can do anything with the slave. Of course, it's very brutal because the masters are not really genuine masters. They're a bunch of idiots. But when we have a genuine master, he doesn't subject his servants to torture any kind of unpleasant situation. He rather takes care of him. He protects his servants. Like the gopis are praying to Krishna. Gopis are praying to Krishna in Gopi Gita. That we are your unpaid maid servant. Ashulko Dashike. But see what you are doing to us. You are killing us by not appearing in front of us. Our separation from you is going to cause us to die. And when we die, then what people will say? They'll say, Neha King Badha. That this, look at Krishna, what he did. He killed some innocent young girls who sold themselves up completely to him without demanding anything in return, without any salary, without any payment. So as it is, to kill a woman is bad. And to kill a woman who has completely surrendered to oneself and who doesn't expect any price for that service, servitorship, to kill that woman is 1,000 times worse. So that is how they were actually provoking Krishna. Or actually that was their main, that was the feelings of their heart. We are going to die due to your separation. So in this way we can see that the devotees don't want to become immortal. Devotees don't want to become immortal. Rather they prefer to die if necessary. So Krishna, we are dying due to your separation. So that is the attitude of a devotee. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying, Mama Janmani Janmani Shari. Mahaprabhu is not saying that this life I have become your devotee, so please give me liberation. No, Mahaprabhu is teaching us how to pray to Krishna. Or in the mood of a devotee, Mahaprabhu is praying in a perfect way. That life after life, that we can become your servants. We can be engaged in your service life after life. Janmani, Janmani Shara. Not one life. Janmani means many, many lives. Plural. So that is the mood, that's the attitude of a devotee. Like liberation or the prospect of not taking birth again is not at all desirable to a devotee. Rather, the devotee is prepared to take birth again and again and again in order to serve Krishna. So the art of dying actually is to become totally surrendered to Krishna. And then automatically immortality is achieved. To begin with, one does not die because, as we explained or as we discussed yesterday, death is to the body. Death is pertaining to the body. The soul never dies. But death actually, through death, we change our situation. Like somebody is engaged in serving Krishna. Now if Krishna wants him to become situated in another kind of service, Krishna knows what's the best way to serve. So if there is another kind of service, then Krishna makes arrangement that he takes another birth. He becomes situated in another body, in another kind of environment, another situation. Just like in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is telling Arjuna, Bohuni me vyatitani janmani tavacha Arjuna. Many a times I have taken birth and so did you. Tani ahang beda sarvani natang bitva parantapa. But I know about all those births, but you don't. Now that is the situation of a conditioned soul, spirit soul. not conditioned soul, spirit soul. The spirit soul's perception is minute. So is his memory. When he changes from one body to another, he forgets about, generally he forgets about his past life. But a devotee, he simply surrenders unto Krishna. He doesn't worry about remembering the past. That's not a big deal for a devotee. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying, forget the past that sleeps, never future dream at all. Live with the time that are with thee, and progress thee shall call. Forget the past, because it's gone. Let it sleep. Forget the past that sleeps. Never future dream at all. Don't dream about your future. Just live with the time. That is, what can I do for Krishna now? Now tomorrow I will serve Krishna. Or yesterday I served Krishna. And today, let me take a holiday. No. That is not the attitude of a devotee. Devotee considers that every single moment is a wonderful opportunity, is a golden opportunity to render service unto Krishna. And that is how he actually continues with his life. Be here now. And only the devotees can properly situate themselves in that understanding. People may talk about it, but they don't know how to be here now. Because the material platform, this is also an important consideration, the material platform is the platform of time, which is transient. Transient means flitting, constantly moving. Therefore, in the material nature, although the time exists, first of all, in the material nature, time exists in three phases: past, present, and future. But when we analyze it carefully, then we see that in material nature, the time is actually existing in the form of past and future. Present is just a fleeting concept. So that is how the time is in the spiritual world. Because Krishna is absolute, time related to Krishna is absolute, and those who are related to that time, they are also absolute. Now, how is it possible? We won't be able to figure out unless we go back to the spiritual world. It's impossible for us to figure, to understand that. So, but that is how it is. In the spiritual world, time is eternal. So when the time is eternal, everything and everyone in relation to that time is also eternal. So there is no past and future there. It's all present. Because everyone is totally absorbed with Krishna. They're so absorbed with Krishna that they don't have any time to think about the past or dream about the future. In a way, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is giving an understanding, some concept. He's saying that when one perceives Krishna, then like when he sees Krishna, then all his senses become his eyes. He just sees, and he doesn't have any other. He doesn't hear, he doesn't taste, he doesn't smell, he doesn't touch. All he perceives is just his. All his senses become one sense, vision, eyes. And then the fragrance from the flowers from Krishna's lotus feet somehow enters into his nostrils. And then he becomes all nose. He is completely absorbed in just smelling the leaves, the tulasi leaves and the flowers at Krishna's lotus feet. Then he hears, then the sound of Krishna's flute enters through his ears. And he becomes all ears. Then he doesn't see anything, he doesn't smell anything. So that is how one actually becomes completely absorbed in the present, and he doesn't have any consideration for past and future. Like in the spiritual world, everyone becomes so absorbed in Krishna that he doesn't have any other perception whatsoever. Anyway, to go back to our point, so Prahlad Maharaj was subjected to the onslaught of his father. His father ordered to kill him. He gave many examples. One of the examples he gave to justify his killing his son, he said a disease generates from the body. The disease generates from the body, but one tries to get rid of that disease. So that somebody is born out of the body is not important. But what it does, that's what is important. And he said, look what this boy is doing. The person who killed his uncle, he's siding with him. He's a traitor. He's a disgrace to the family. And he ordered his big generals, Sambar, Namuchi, they are big, powerful generals, and said, kill this boy. And they immediately took their swords, took their tridents, took their other weapons, and attacked Prahlad Maharaj, shouting, kill him, kill him. That's just that shout must have been so frightening. But Dhruva Maharaj was, Prahlad Maharaj was totally, completely unperturbed. And as a result of that, nothing happened to Prahlad Maharaj. Like what could have happened? They were just trying to cut him, his body, with their weapons. But just the weapon went through his body and nothing happened to him. And some weapons just broke. The heavy metal weapon. And just by touching Prahlad Maharaj's body, they just broke into pieces. And they're completely surprised. And why? They couldn't do anything to Prahlad Maharaj? Why? Because Prahlad Maharaj mastered the art of dying. Isn't it? What is the mastery? What is the way to master the art of dying? Meditate upon Krishna. Just depend upon Krishna. And Krishna has given his promise that nothing will happen to his devotees. Madbhakta na pranashyati. My devotees will never vanquish. So this is how Krishna takes care of his devotees. But of course, sometimes we see that devotees die. But when we see that a devotee is dying, then what do we have to understand? The death actually came to him like the death came to Dhruva Maharaj. With folded hands, begging to receive his mercy. And a devotee put his feet on his head and stepped into the chariot of Vaikuntha. Now, an interesting thing to note here is, have you ever seen a devotee leaving his or her body? No. Okay. Now mark one thing, that you will see that his or her face looks so, not only serene, but blissful, as if there is a smile in his face. Completely unaffected. He left the body as if he was seeing Krishna standing in front. Now, as opposed to a devotee's body, watch a non-devotee's dead body. And from that, you know, you can make out who they had been seeing at that time. The non-devotees had been seeing the Jamadutas, and the devotees saw Vishnu Dutas or Krishna himself. Now, how can one see Krishna at a time like that? Because one quality of Krishna is that he is grateful. Krishna is grateful. Those who have dedicated their lives to Krishna, Krishna remembers that these devotees have offered everything to me, they have sacrificed everything to me for my sake. So Krishna is so grateful. And we also know that a friend in need is a friend indeed. So what is the greatest need for our friend? When do we need our friend the most? At that time, when we are about to leave this body. So won't Krishna, who is the friend of his devotees, in this respect, one important thing to remember is Bhishma Dev is addressing Krishna at the time of leaving his body as a friend of Arjuna, Vijaya Sakhe. Why he is addressing Krishna with that name, that friend of Arjuna? He is actually addressing that point. Krishna is friend. Krishna, you are a friend of your devotee. So if ever I rendered any devotional service to you, then please become my friend and show your friendship towards me at this very, very critical time. So this is how Krishna is established as Vijaya Sakhe, the friend of his devotee. And Krishna is grateful. One of the qualities of Krishna is he is grateful. Like if we have done little bit for Krishna, then Krishna will never forget that. And he will reciprocate. He will reciprocate. And that's the advantage of becoming a devotee. And that is the art of dying. And that is the way to conquer death. And that is the way to attain immortality. Now, another beautiful example of an individual who mastered the art of dying is Gajendra, an elephant. An elephant, he was attacked by a crocodile when he went to sport in the water. And although elephant is very, very powerful, but he is fighting at a foreign land or at a foreign place in water. He doesn't belong to the water. The crocodile, whereas the crocodile belongs to water. So, although from the normal calculation, an elephant is much stronger than a crocodile, but in the water the crocodile is stronger. And they fought and fought and fought for a long, long time. And then the elephant realized that his strength is now waning. And he realized he doesn't have any chance to rescue himself from this situation. So what did he do? At that time, when he realized, now the time has come for me to leave my body, I'm going to die. And he realized that this is the time to remember Krishna. And as soon as the elephant remembered Krishna, what did Krishna do? As soon as Krishna realized that his devotee is in distress and he is remembering him, Krishna immediately came there, riding on Garuda. And he released the chakra and chopped the head of the crocodile and rescued the Gajendra. So this is another example of an individual who mastered the art of dying. Even an elephant can master, even an animal can master this art. And the result is, what is the result of this, this mastering this art? He attains immortality. The benefit of remembering Krishna has been very wonderfully explained through the story of Ajamil. Ajamil actually didn't remember Krishna at that time. He saw Jamadutas and he was scared. He was scared to death. And he realized, well, now my time is up. Now I have to leave. And he called out to his son, youngest son, whose name happened to be Narayan. And as soon as he called his name, it was not a pure chanting of the holy name of the Lord. It was Nam Abhash. It was chanted in a clearing stage. And as a result of that, immediately Vishnu Dutas came. And Prabhupada said that Vishnu Dutas are actually patrolling around all over. The Vishnu Dutas are flying around in their spaceships. And whenever they hear a devotee is remembering Krishna, immediately they come to their rescue. And that is the potency of the holy name of the Lord. Even if we chant unconsciously, unintentionally. There's another such example is Javana. According to Javana language, a boar is called haram. A pig is called haram. So this guy had been attacked by a swine, a boar, and he saw that, he saw the boar coming, and he just called out, haram. And what did the Vishnu Dutas hear? They heard haram. And they came to his rescue. So this is how the Lord and the Supreme Personality of Godhead made his divine arrangement to take care of those who have become his devotees. Another wonderful example from Srimad Bhagavatam about a person who mastered the art of dying is Chitraketu, who became Vritrasura. Chitraketu was a king, a very powerful king. And although he had everything, but he was unhappy because he didn't have a son. So Angira Rishi, one day was visiting him. And so he noticed that the king was looking very morose, very unhappy. So he asked him, what happened? You have everything. You are such a powerful king. You have subdued all your enemies and you have everything to enjoy. But how come you're still unhappy? Then Chitraketu confided in him that he didn't have a son. He didn't have a successor to the throne. Although he married so many beautiful princesses, but none of them could bear a son for him. So then Angira said, okay, if that is what you want, I'll fulfill your desire. But be sure that while your son will be the cause of your joy, he'll also be the cause of your distress. And so he thought, you know, like, as just as sometimes children are naughty and cause some distress, you know. But after all, I'll get a son. So he was very happy, and he, in due course of time, he got a son. But the son became, Chitraketu became so attached to the son and the mother of that son, Kritaduti, that Chitraketu started to neglect his other wives. And not only he started to neglect his other wives, he also started to neglect his royal responsibilities. So the queens were envious, queens became very envious, and the ministers became disturbed, may become concerned that how the kingdom is going to go on like this. And then these envious queens one day decided to poison this boy. And they thought that if we kill this boy, then the king's attention will be reverted towards us. So they poisoned the boy. And when the boy died, the king was submerged in an ocean of agony along with the queen Kritaduti. At that time, Rishi Angira came along with Narad Muni. And the king was begging, please do something. Please bring my son back to life. So Narad Muni said, okay, I will do that. I'll do that. And he went and called the boy, why are you leaving? Don't you see that your parents are in such anguish? Then the boy came back to life. He sat up. And he asked Narad Muni, which parents you are talking about? I had so many parents, but which one you are talking about? And just these words of wisdom from this boy enlightened the king. He realized the futility of material existence. We are here only for a short while. We take birth, stay here for some time, then we go, and then again we come back. And in this way, it goes on and on and on, or it is going on since time immemorial. We all are traveling. Jantra Rurhani Mayaya. We are traveling in some machines that have been designed by Maya. These bodies are actually a machine, like a very wonderful motor car, far superior to a motor car. Motor cars are a replica of this machine. This human body, it can it has such incredible ability that no machine, no matter how sophisticated that machine is, will compare to nothing to it, to this human body or any body as such. If we think about it a little deeply, we can see that what a wonderful machine this is. And after all, it is a machine. To give an example, what a wonderful machine this is, the two machines get together and the third machine is produced. Right? And in this way, it goes on and on and on. Another kind of machine is the trees. One little fruit, and inside the fruits there are thousands of seeds. Like consider a fig. How many seeds are there in that fig? And in each seed there is a tree. There is a fig tree. And in that tree there are innumerable fruits. And in each fruit there are thousands of seeds. This is what Prabhupada told me once. Prabhupada had a prune. And after eating the prune, Prabhupada held the seed in his hand. And he told me, inside this, there's a tree. And in that tree, there are innumerable fruits. And in each, fruit, there is a seed. And in that seed, there is a tree. And in that tree, there are innumerable fruits. And in those fruits, there are seeds. And in that seed, there's a tree. And then Prabhupada said, can any scientist produce something like this? Can they manufacture something like this? And still, they want to compete with Krishna. So anyway, this is how wonderful Krishna's creation is, and this is how wonderful our bodies are. And in these bodies, the soul is situated, and then the soul travels according to the modes of material nature. Urdhaṃ gacchanti sattvastha madhye tiṣṭhati rājasa jaghanna guna vrittiśca adho gacchanti tamasa. Those who are situated in the mode of goodness, they go up. Those who are in the mode of passion, they remain here. And those who have become affected by the abominable mode of ignorance, they go down to the lower species of life. So in this way, living entities are constantly traveling, sometimes going up, sometimes going down, like in a Ferris wheel. So Chitraketu realized that living entities are just traveling in this body, in different bodies in this way, and we, due to our ignorance, become attached to those bodies, thinking that they are our children or relatives, friends. And so then Chitraketu begged Narad Muni to bless him with spiritual knowledge. And Narad Muni gave him the mantra. And Chitraketu started to chant the mantra, started to meditate on the mantra. And by chanting on the mantra, Chitraketu was so elevated that he became the king of the Gandharvas. And then he was traveling. He had the ability to travel throughout the universe in his personal spaceship. Not spaceship, the personal traveling planet. He had a planet of his own. And that planet was traveling around. And then while he was flying around in that way in his own planet, one day he saw Lord Shiva sitting with Parvati, surrounded by all exalted personalities, very, very exalted sages and brahmanas. And Lord Shiva was naked and Parvati was sitting on his lap. So Chitraketu smiled. He said that, look at him. He's sitting in such an exalted assembly, but look at this, look at his state. Lord Shiva didn't mind that Chitraketu thought that way, because Lord Shiva knew Chitraketu's exalted position. So he didn't mind that. But Parvati couldn't tolerate that. Parvati immediately cursed Chitraketu. And look at that impudent fool. He dares to speak like that. So I curse him that he'll become a demon. And as a result of that curse, of course, before that also Bhagavatam explains that Chitraketu was so exalted that Chitraketu could counter-cast Parvati. Because Parvati's curse was not fair.
Because what Chitraketu, the way he perceived the behavior of an exalted personality, from his point of view, it was right. And that's why Lord Shiva was silent. He didn't say anything. But Chitraketu, because he was a devotee of the Lord, he just accepted it. And that is the situation of a devotee. Whether he is blessed or whether he is cursed, he accepts both as the mercy of the Lord. And then Chitraketu became a demon, Vritrasura. But he was so powerful a demon that he defeated Indra. He defeated Indra. Took away his kingdom. Now Indra was in great distress and he wanted to do something to regain his kingdom, so he approached Vishnu, Narayan. And then Vishnu advised, okay, the only thing that can kill Chitraketu is thunder that can be made from the bones of a great sage called Dadhichi. So Indra went to Dadhichi and asked him, "Will you kindly give me your bones?" Because Britra has to be killed, and the only way he can be killed is by the thunder made out of your bones. Now this way we can see Indra, who was not actually adept in the art of dying, he behaved in such a way. Like his only concern was his own selfish benefit. So Dadhichi was so exalted a personality. He said, he actually is a person who knew the art of dying. So what he said? So, well, after all, this body is temporary. And eventually this body will become the food for insects and worms. So what if this body can be used in some good cause? Why not? So he gave his bones. That means he had to leave his body. And with his body, thunder was made. Vishakarma made the thunder. And with thunder becoming powerful, with this thunder, Indra challenged Britra to a battle. And Britra knew that the Lord's desire is that now he'll die. But still, as a Kshatriya, he accepted that situation. He came to the battlefield to fight with Indra, with his soldiers, with his army. And now, becoming powerful with the thunder, the demigods became so powerful that their onslaught was unbearable for the demons, Britra's soldiers, and they started to run away from the battlefield. And Britra was standing alone in the battlefield, still, ready to fight with Indra. And with his mace, he hit Indra so hard that Indra's elephant, Oirava, took 10 steps back. And thunder fell out of Indra's hand. And Indra was completely baffled and embarrassed. He was just standing there, unarmed. Britra could have killed him at that time. But Britra said, "It is not to be. Like, I know I'm going to die in this battle. The thunder has been created to kill me." So Indra, pick up the thunder. This is not the time to become baffled. Just pick up the thunder and come fight. And then Indra picked up the thunder, and the fight ensued. And the fight was so terrible that Indra cut Britra's hand, right hand. Britra was fighting with his left hand. Indra cut off his left hand with the thunder. Then Britra was fighting with his legs. Then Indra cut off the legs of Britra. Then Britra, assuming a huge form, he swallowed up Indra. And Indra, from within the Britra's belly, he cut open the belly with the thunder and came out. And then he cut, he applied the thunder to cut Britra's head. And thunder, it took thunder 365 days to cut Britra's head. Now Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur makes the point here. He said, actually, Britra didn't die. It's Indra who died. When Britra swallowed up Indra, then he considered, well, my job has been finished. So now, let me leave my body. So he left his body and went to the abode of Shankarshan, the spiritual sky. So this is another wonderful example of an individual from Srimad Bhagavatam who mastered the art of dying. Now, what is the result of mastering this very special art? From all these examples, all these anecdotes, what did he learn? That when one masters this art, what happens to him? He becomes immortal. And what is the what is this art ultimately? Remember Krishna all the time and never forget him. Especially at the time of difficulties, remember Krishna. Now one may be practicing devotional service. One may be practicing the art of mastering, practicing the art of mastering this subject. But if he practices properly, then he will be able to practically apply this art when the time comes. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. Does anybody have any question? Yes, Mother Jadurani. Was organ donations and body donations?
Yeah. Driver's license, you asked that question. You want to be an organ donor.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, at least this practice is demoniac. You know, donating parts of the body. You know, like if somebody, something by Krishna's arrangement is meant to not function, then why replace it with somebody else's? Like, it's best is to just accept what Krishna wants. If Krishna wants me to be blind, let me be blind. If Krishna wants me to function with one kidney, let me function with one kidney. If Krishna wants me to die, then why prolong my stay here by borrowing somebody else's heart?
There are a lot of people who are suffering not being devotees. But if you can at least, as if you can ease their, I guess, human pain, is there any benefit to that?
No. Like people with perfect organs, don't they suffer? So what's the guarantee that if they rectify their defective organs, then they won't suffer? So rather, it's better to realize that this material nature is a place of suffering. So no matter how much, no matter whatever we try to do, we are bound to suffer. So let's suffer and learn a lesson. Right? Yeah, right, sure. As devotees, devotees are very merciful. And that is why they are trying to take them to a situation where they can become totally free from the sufferings of the material existence. Right? Can you give a guarantee that after he gets a new heart, he'll accept the message of Krishna? That's what I mean. Like so many people with good hearts, they're not accepting, right? Perfectly functioning hearts, they're not accepting.
But what use is the body to me since it's gone? I'm gone. What use is the body if it's nothing?
Yeah. The thing is that a body should... In normal condition, the body should be kept intact after death. For example, Prabhupada repeatedly reminded us or told us that his body should be punctured with any needles or anything. And he said that even if he, just in case he becomes unconscious, he shouldn't be taken to a hospital. He told me that 3 times. That if I become unconscious, don't let them take me to a hospital. Why? Because if he was taken to a hospital, then he would become subjected to this to the so-called doctors, right? And they don't know what to do with his body. So Prabhupada actually gave a very, very strict injunction in that way. Why? Because the devotee's body shouldn't be punctured. What to speak of devotee's body to cut, to be cut, shouldn't be cut. What to speak of, you know, taking out some organ and just placing it in someone else's body. You know, devotee's body is so precious that it is said that if a drop of a devotee falls on the earth, Mother Earth cannot bear that. Mother Earth cannot tolerate a drop of blood falling on from the body of a devotee. In the Vedic culture, we see, yes, Kshatriyas die in that way. But that's because they're Kshatriyas. And because they're in the mode of passion, their awareness or their Krishna consciousness may come abruptly in the body. All of a sudden, you know, like... I mean, they have the understanding. They're not this body, they're spirit soul. But because they're in the mode of passion, they can actually come to that situation and accept, now the time to remember Krishna. Like Vritrasura, his body is cut and, you know, like what a ghastly scene. But Vritra, he just remembered his worshipable Lord Shankarshan and left. Anyway, Rasheshwari, you have your hands up. Yeah. Do you want to comment on that?
I used to be an organ donor before I was became Krishna consciousness, and I worked 6 years in the heart lung transplant unit at UNC Hospital. hospital, and it's a very much misnomer to think that you're helping someone by putting in a new heart and a lung, because they give all kinds of medicine for anti-rejection, and that then causes a whole other realm of complications, and they're in and out of the intensive care unit. Not even from a spiritual platform, but even from a material platform.
Yeah, what a way to enjoy. yes, Udayananda Prabhupada.
Actually, Prabhupada was, they addressed Prabhupada about this, because they were in that, during the time in the 70s, that was when the hearts or transplants were taking place. And Prabhupada actually said, if you donate some organs to a person, and then you revitalize their life, and then they commit sinful activities, they kill a cow, then you become implicated in that cow killing. So you're thinking you're doing something merciful, but actually you may be facilitating some very simple activity. So it's mundane compassion. Real compassion is give them the holy name, because then they never take birth again.
Mother Sita?
I was just going to say
oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Not about Prabhu? You see, they're not, most of the people, those who go to Kumbh Mela with that objective to become, to drink nectar and become immortal, they're not devotees. They're either Karmakandis or Gyanis. They get some material benefit. They get some material benefit. If they can take advantage of that properly. They may be elevated to higher planetary system. But the devotees go there to give people the... devotees go there to give them Krishna consciousness. Yes?
Guruji, there is one more classic example from Maharashtra, Sant Tukarama, who learned it or practiced the art of dying.
Anyway, we'll discuss about that some other time. I mean, with the material body, no one goes to spiritual world. Yeah, we have to understand that, you know, like he developed his spiritual body, and with the spiritual body he went. And when he was in a material nature, he already developed his spiritual body. That's why in the self-same body, he went back. The material body must die, it must stay behind. Even Krishna, when he left this world, he left one body behind, illusory body. And that body was burnt. They did cremation of Krishna.
Was living in this temple when she was a young girl, and her mother would come and visit. And at first her mother wasn't so favorable, but she'd come and take prasad, and she liked the devotee. And then she had cancer, and we would keep contact with her. And then when it was near her final time of leaving her body, it seemed that Krishna, you know, through the association devotees, like, taught her the art of dying. So we had all gone to see her, and we had pictures of Radha Golokananda there, and we were pouring, like, you know, Ganges water. 4 days before she left the body, her body, she was at home, and I got to be there with her all the time, like, chanting. And then she was in and out of consciousness, but then Krishna, like, allowed her to leave her body, like with a tape of devotees singing, being there, and her daughter chanting. And so I was, after I saw that, it gave me like so much faith how by the association of devotees and just even starting to think favorably, because she was thinking, I really love these people so much, and she'd be thinking, you know, when will I dance with you again? And then right before she was leaving her body, you know, I left like a day before she did, but I remember like whispering in her ears, we'll be dancing again before Krishna, we'll be dancing again. And in that way, we were just like helping her. So I was just like amazed when I saw, because I've seen a number of times, because sometimes we feel like we're struggling so much, how will we ever remember Krishna? How will we ever overcome all these difficulties? But I've seen that the parents so often of children that are practicing Krishna consciousness can remember. And even like my own mother, I mean, she's still engaged in so much sinful activity due to the particular body she's in. And obviously, you know, she'll have to take another birth. But even recently, I got a letter from her, and she said, I'm missing your presence, but I have Hare Krishna with me always. And then she was just telling me, I'm just always praying to your Krishna, praying to your Krishna. So then I was just seeing how somehow or other, by Prabhupada's mercy, you know, Krishna is like helping these people learn the art
right.
of dying.
Yeah, true, true. Tomorrow we will discuss about, you know, today we discussed about the personalities who mastered the art from Srimad Bhagavatam. But tomorrow we can discuss about the individuals who mastered the art. Around us that we have seen. So if anyone has some anecdote, please prepare, and we can. I will ask different devotees to tell the stories, like Mother Krishna Priya said today, like how by some inconceivable mercy of Srila Prabhupada and his devotees, so many individuals are actually developing this ability to master this art. Yes, Udayananda Prabhu.
They're following what the question Jadarani had. You don't give organ transplants to non-devotees, but when I saw Srila Prabhupada, you know, back in 77, remember, I think it was Guru Kripa said, I want to give you my youth, probably, because I'm a useless soul, and I have so much youth, vitality like that. The great preachers and great devotees of the Lord, if would that be appropriate for them to have,
Okay, good that you brought up this point. At that time, many devotees used to write like that. That Prabhupada, I want to give you my life, you know, you continue to stay and take my life and my lifespan, my youth. You know what Prabhupada's reply was to that? That's the time Prabhupada said, your love will be shown by how you cooperate with each other. Not just some empty words, Prabhupada, take my life. Like, your real love will be shown by how you cooperate with each other. So Prabhupada was not, you know, he didn't care about what they were offering him or they were suggesting to offer to him. But his concern was that if you really love me, then show the love through your cooperation. Not just Prabhupada, take my life, and then next day you leave the movement because you can't tolerate your god brothers. So Mother I forgot your name. Mother Sadhvi, yeah. You had your hands up? Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you had your hands up. Okay. Okay, then I'll stop now. So tomorrow the session will begin at 5 o'clock.